In Sonia Renee Taylor's poem that you just heard, she spoke of an 80-person wall saving Roberta's family. You may not know this whole story. What happened is about 6 years ago, Roberta's 8 and 11-year-old sons were out in the bay in Florida, and another couple who was out with them got caught in a riptide 100 yards off the beach. Roberta, her mom, and two other people tried to rescue them, and they also got caught in the riptide. They were floundering, their arms flailing, going under, coming up, drowning. And someone on the beach saw them. And she just thought that if enough people could band together and hold hands, they could withstand that current and possibly save that family. So her friends began calling other people to join them. And people came, strangers, all races, all ages, all sizes, all political parties, all holding hands in that powerful current, making a wall 80 people strong. No one knew if it would work. It was an act of complete faith. But it did work. They passed the family and the others who were passed out and gagging on water, one by one, over an hour, down the line, until every single person was safe. They resisted a powerful force capable of killing. They resisted on faith. They resisted with their hands held tight. Our theme this month is resistance. And there is so much to resist. We know it all. Climate changes, gun violence, oppression, racism, anti-trans bills, starvation, homelessness, and other endless forms of injustice and suffering inflicted by the systems we live in. We live in an economic system that voraciously turns the earth, people, plants, and animals into resources that are able to make profits. It tells us that human nature is to be greedy, and through greed itself, we can make the world comfortable and safe and full of all kinds of fun and enjoyable things. It hides the truth best it can, that in this system only some people get to be comfortable and safe, and that most people and the earth loses. How do we resist that? I feel like I'm drowning as I read through titles of books and articles and documentaries and podcasts that explore all the myriad of details of these injustices and all of the myriad of answers about how to resist labor revolts, mass movements, sharing resources, lowering our carbon footprint, changing laws, changing minds, changing hearts, stop investing in oil companies and plastic companies, stop the incessant investor demand for quick, high returns, and dismantle white supremacist culture. I sometimes feel like I'm swimming as hard as I can in that current just to get enough quality information to know what is going on. It is so easy to decide that if I just work harder and do more and do the right things, well, maybe, just maybe, I could make a dent in all that breaks my heart. And when I don't work as hard as I can or do all the right things, I feel appropriately guilty. When will I have done enough? I actually have no idea. There is always so much more to do. It is easy to get pulled down into the currents of apathy, despair, and hopelessness, to become numb, to hardly let the latest shooting or climate disaster, both which we struggled with this week, or fascist law, that one too this week, to touch our hearts. It's easy to let it fall off, to be numb. It's easy to just be frozen as things go down, to disassociate. Consider our latest TV show, the latest drama with our friends, and just wishing in the back of our minds that someone, anyone, a hero, could it be the Avengers, perhaps, or another Martin Luther King Jr. who will just show up, who will just show up and save us from this. Audre Lorde, black feminist writer, famously said, "The master's tools will never dismantle the master's house." In our culture, the foundations of the master's house are capitalism, consumerism, and white supremacist culture. Productive people built the master's house. And most of us, so that we will be productive, learned that we are not worthy unless we are productive. We get things done. And that to belong, we must be like other people with similar consumer goods and narrow, acceptable ways of being human beings. Eternalized capitalism is the name for the belief that we are not worthy unless we get a lot done. Internalized capitalism is the impulse that causes people to work when they are sick and to get the to-do list done instead of hanging out with family or friends or themselves. Eternalized capitalism is when someone asks how we are and we say, "Oh, I'm just so busy," which is a signal that we're doing this living thing the right way. While the term internalized capitalism may be increasingly popular, the concept of internalized capitalism is not new, says Anders Hayden, a white Canadian professor of political science. It appears to be a more novel way of describing the Calvinist worth ethic, a value that equates hard work and success with salvation. The Calvinists had this incredible doubt of whether they were worthy, and to prove that they were worthy, they had to be able to show that they could be continually industrious and continually producing. We live in a Calvinist society. Unitarian Universalists are direct descendants of the Calvinist Puritans. And while you use intellectually left behind Calvinist theology two centuries ago, most Americans still live under their oppressive worldview. It is a worldview that says to be worthy, to be savable and loved, we must be productive. To be worthy, savable, and loved, we must perfect ourselves in order to fit in a narrow mold of what it means to be human. When we want to transform our society, we naturally grab for the master's tools. They are, after all, the tools that we all know. We believe that to transform the world, we must work very, very hard, even sacrificially hard. If we don't work hard, we may feel guilty or ashamed of all we do not do. And perhaps we decide our contribution will be to fix ourselves. We will sign petitions, give money, eat organic, and buy green products. We will learn more. We will know more. We will try harder to be the people we most value, good, productive, busy people who are always improving themselves in some way. We attempt to use the master's tools to take down the master's house. And some of the results are we end up exhausted or ashamed. We may numb out. That's a big American thing to do. We are provided with myriads of activities and substances that our culture readily provides for this purpose. Alcohol, television, marijuana, shopping. We may not believe the Calvinist ideas of heaven and hell, but somehow we can end up in hell anyway. So if not the master's tools, how else do we resist? For Adrienne Breen Brown, a black queer activist, the answer is discovering pleasure, our own ability to experience pleasure. For Ross Gay, a black poet, he says we should lean in to delight and to joy. Trisha Hersey, a black activist, says rest. She has a whole napping ministry. Sonia Renee Brown, who we heard this morning, says, love yourself fiercely. Their message is to stop looking at Calvinism for salvation. We do not become fulfilled people. We do not take down the industrial military complex by working harder. What they say is to just wake up and discover that Eden is right here, right now. We just need to notice it. Brown says, look to your body. Her most famous poem is called The Body Is Not an Apology. Your body, however it is feeling right now, whatever size it is, however your skin looks, whether it moves slowly or just can't sit still no matter what, if it forgets words or can't spell, it doesn't learn very quickly, whether your body gets anxious or depressed or just can't pay attention, your body, however it is right now, is not something to apologize for. It is amazing and beautiful and perfect. It is alive on this planet. And what else is important? Wouldn't it be amazing to live in a society where all our ways of being human could truly flourish? Instead of saying, every person needs this kind of body and this kind of mind and this capacity to produce and consume, or we'll try to fix them and medicate them and diet them and give them pills for their brain. Instead of that, wouldn't it be great if we were just all worthy of love and belonging? Just as we are, we were loved just how we are, without being fixed. And that means all of you, that we are all loved, that I am loved. In this world, I would not have to apologize for my dyslexia, for not being thinner, or needing more sleep than most people, which I have to tell you I find highly irritating. What would you not have to apologize for in a world that found you just fine as you are? What would it be so wonderful to stop apologizing for? Stop trying to fix. Just take a moment. Take a breath. What do you try to fix about yourself to make yourself acceptable in this world? Wouldn't it be a miracle to never have to apologize for that again? According to Brown and other thinkers, our power comes from our fierce love of ourselves, of others, and for life itself. It does not come from sacrifice, endless work, and guilt. You can even hear it in that, right? The grounding of fierce love versus the exhaustion of constantly beating yourself up. Love powers us. Because when we truly accept ourselves, we insist on being treated as worthy of respect and love. When we love ourselves and others fiercely, power cannot shame us and send us scurrying home, worried that others will discover all the ways that we are lazy and imperfect. Instead of insisting power gives us and others a decent wage and respect, we are home trying to fix ourselves into something we hope is acceptable so we can belong, so we will not get hurt by the system that wants us to be a particular productive way. So if you read about my sermon before today, the little blurb, you probably knew that my sermon was about resisting capitalism and consumerism. And you probably expected me to say something about living simply, lowering your carbon footprint. And perhaps you were ready to receive a tip or two about how to do all of these things a little better. And instead, I stand before you, saying resistance means radical self-love, even the parts of you that you find embarrassing or worse, even the parts of you that are lazy and unproductive. Do I have any idea what I'm asking you might be saying? How impossible that is? Couldn't we just reduce our air travel or start a buy nothing group? And actually, I do know. Believe me, I know. Years ago, I went into a panic that someday I would have to parent a teenage girl. I knew so much could go wrong in a teenage girl's life, and so I got really focused on the possibility of anorexia. My daughter was still young, so I decided I would figure out all the things that you have to do to prevent it. And the number one answer across a variety of sources, believe me, I looked at a variety of sources, was that the mother needed to love her body and never diet. That was the answer. And I was stunned, I mean, and shocked, and I was ready to pretty much do anything to set my daughter up to get through adolescence in a healthy way. But love my body and never diet? What were they talking about? How is that even possible? I am an American woman, after all. And while loving one's body isn't something that most of us do. But there it was, over and over, in black and white. Loving my body would help my daughter flourish. My self-love would be a healing balm. It is such an anti-Calvinist view. Loving yourself, not beating yourself up to do more or be better, is the power that heals and transforms. For example, if I could fiercely love my dyslexia, I am released from the power of those who think bad spelling and misplaced words means I'm not smart. Their power to hurt me and send me scurrying away to figure out how to fix dyslexia is gone. What is left behind is so much cleaner, a problem to solve. How do I communicate via email and text when I have no proofreader, when my fingers type the wrong word and my eyes simply don't notice? It becomes a technical problem, not something I am ashamed of or trying to fix my brain, which isn't going to happen. It becomes a technical problem of how we communicate with one another, with that challenge in the middle of it. And I just want to let you know as an aside that I believe that you are all very gracious with your minister's idiosyncratic in that way, and I'm so appreciative hardly anyone ever says anything snarky, which, you know, so I'm glad. So imagine if everyone decided that they just loved their bodies, that their bodies were just fine. The diet and cosmetic industries would vanish in a puff. Think of all the energy we'd have not enacting new food plans and figuring out what the latest research is about that and being hungry and beating ourselves up for not making it to the gym or taking enough steps. Instead of trying to fix ourselves into some range of acceptability and beating ourselves up for not doing the right things, we might just learn to listen to our lovely bodies and take care of them. And the goal could be to feel good and be full of energy so that we can live our lives fully instead of trying to make a certain weight goal or measurement goal or blood pressure goal. Remember the wonderful book that Liz shared last week where the young boy discovered he was a mermaid and his grandmother just loved her little mermaid and took her merchild to meet other mermaids? Consider being your own grandmother. indulgent and kind to whoever we are. This kind of seems insane, doesn't it? I mean, there are hard and scary things happening today. Really hard, really scary things. We cannot just rest more, take more time for pleasure and delight, and stop trying to fix the unacceptable bits of ourselves. I mean, if we did that, seriously, wouldn't everything get worse? Wouldn't we just become self-indulgent, hedonistic monsters? Well, this is the real moment of truth. This is the moment when we each get to decide what our real faith is. What do you actually believe about human nature? What you actually believe about human nature is the answer to that question of what happened next when we genuinely love and care for ourselves. Do you believe, like the story of Genesis, that the human impulse is to sin? And as the Calvinists believe that we must regulate and control and push ourselves to make ourselves good and acceptable? Do you believe that without making ourselves be good, we would not be good, and we would not care for each other and the earth? Do you believe like the Jewish story we heard this morning, that each person, each animal, each plant, each object has a bit of the divine light, something holy that draws us toward each other and toward love and care? Do you believe that if you were well rested, cared for, energized by pleasure and joy, and filled with love and respect for yourself, that you would help your neighbor and feed the hungry? Or that you would stay home and watch television? The Calvinist worth ethic, which has morphed into internalized capitalism, is based on the idea that we are basically bad and sinful, and we must be productive and appear socially acceptable in order to prove our inherent goodness. The Jewish story believes we each have divine light of creation within us. We are good, and it is our nature to shine and discover the shining light in every other person and every other living and non-living creatures. I don't know the word for that. Our nature is to find the light and to bring it back together so it blazes bright and dazzling, showing us a new way of being together with each other and the world. It's something you have to do on faith, because we don't know exactly how it might be. Those 80 people on the beach that day were ordinary people of all genders and races and religious views. Some were having good days and others bad days. Surely many had dialed pans, or at least feeling downright terrible about all the chips they just ate. And others were worried about all they had to do when this beach day was over. Some may have even been secretly working on their phones. Then the call went up and down the beach, "We need help." And for some reason, that divine light of care, love, interconnection blazed forth. It was a crazy plan, really, to stand together holding hands to resist a brutal current. And we know how powerful they can be. But they did it anyway, quickly, I imagine, since there was little time to debate a plan, little time to think about the risks, with people being pulled under the water, gasping. All 80 acted on faith. They acted on trust. They did the impossible thing. Setting down the master's tools that have trained us to produce and consume for the benefit of the ever-increasing gross domestic product and the billionaire class is an act of faith. For many of us, those tools have helped us build lives that have worked well, or well enough. It seems hard to believe that something as delicious as simply loving every single bit of ourselves, insisting on joy, rest, and pleasure, and seeking and affirming the precious light of other beings could be the resistance that brings down a system as overwhelming and powerful as global corporate capitalism. But I say this to you, the people are drowning. And we must go now, together, into the water, love and light from our beings blazing to face that current, with our hands clasped together, with faith that sometimes love and care for ourselves and each other really is enough, and it really can save us. Let us rise and sing This Little Light of Mine.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
Everywhere I go,
everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
All around the world,
all around the world, I'm gonna let it shine. All around the world, I'm gonna let it shine. All around the world, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
So go forth, my friends, and shine your light wherever you go. And we will now extinguish this flash flame, but not the vision and compassion of our faith. May they stay with each of you until we meet again. We will now do Carry the Flame. At the end, the front people will turn towards the back so we can sing together.
Carry the flame of peace.